And it was good to have such music both at the first and second service, because our worship this morning is kind of one that asks us to think about church and why we love it so much. And in part, it's the joy of music and celebrating what we have together through joys and sorrows. Sometimes it's through just the funny things that happen. And so I have a couple of readings for you, kind of a longer reading from the minister, Aleah Kemler. It's entitled A Future in This Place. Aleah, when she was first a minister, kept a journal. And these are notes from her first year of ministry. The first reading that I'll give you is entitled The Church Where Everything Goes Wrong. I go back to it a lot in my own work. She writes, 6 weeks into the church year, I have realized that I am the minister of a church where things usually go wrong. The copy machine jams, the bulletin describing the order of worship has been copied with the second page first and also upside down. No one remembered to turn on the lights in the sanctuary before the service begins, so it's dark outside because it's raining. The microphone is buzzing and lets out that painful, high-pitched squeal which makes people wince. We've just started the service when someone runs up with a bunch of flowers for the altar, just as someone else runs up with the silk arrangement we keep for the mornings when no one brings real flowers. There's laughter as the two flower bearers meet at the altar. They each move forward and finally decide on the real flowers. And things settle down for a while until a baby starts to cry, which sets off another baby crying. I try to speak over their wailing as their fathers hustle them down the aisle and try to distract them in the back. Usually, I love the tall, gentle fathers who bounce their babies in backpacks at the rear of the sanctuary. But today, I'm annoyed because I want it to be quiet and holy and lovely, and things are definitely not shaping up that way. The woman helping with worship gets up and, instead of giving the announcements, introduces the candle lighting time, which comes later. People yell out, "Not yet!" More laughter. The organist starts playing the wrong hymn, and a couple of members yell over the din for him to stop. A few minutes later, during the time for prayerful silence, he falls onto the keyboard by accident, causing the organ to emit horrible, gassy noises, shrieks and snorts of laughter. All pretense of Sunday morning decorum is lost. And something inside me, some furious, bossy desire to have my worship service go according to my plan, it finally slides free and I can laugh with them. This will be the first of many times that I laugh at Sunday morning details gone awry. It is also the first of many times that I imagine God looking up or down or over or out at us from wherever it is that God sits on Sunday mornings, slightly amazed and maybe at a loss for words all at the same time, because we are so funny and wonderful and odd. In these moments, I imagine God as a sturdy old woman with her hands on her hips, or perhaps as a rabbi pulling on his long white beard. I imagine a God shaking his or her head saying, "What in the world are they doing over there? This is what they call church? What were they thinking?" But I also imagine a God who was touched and a little honored by our efforts, however halting, to worship and give praise. I imagine a God who was moved by our attempts to care for one another and to name the things that we know to be holy. There is a warmth in this church that is new to me, a simple friendliness that shines through the fumblings and failures, a love that makes the ragged edges smooth. I have always wanted to believe that our mistakes aren't the most important parts of us. I've always wanted to believe that kindness and compassion matter more than anything, and I sense that I can learn that here. So, Aleah, the minister, goes to write more in her journal. She writes in January of the holidays and the struggles the ministers face, the depression that comes after all the work and getting lost in computer games. She writes of bringing her dog in April and how fun that was and accidents that happened along the way. And then she writes this entry in June. Dog excrement has played a larger role in the life of the church than I expected. Certainly it's played a larger role than I was led to believe at Divinity School, where in 4 years it never once came up. The second time that dog poo made its appearance in church was on the morning of our coming of age ceremony for a wonderful, bespectacled 12-year-old I'll call Michael. Coming of age is our church's version of bar mitzvah or confirmation, and on this particular morning, we are celebrating Michael, his successful completion of this 10-month program, and he is going to give the sermon. His mentor, an adult who he's met with throughout the program, is going to speak, and his family is going to present him with an important gift symbolic of his coming adulthood and his new status in their eyes and in the eyes of the church. His parents are hanging photos up around the congregation of a sweet-faced baby and the development to the sweet-faced young man who will soon stand before us. Several of the other young boys in the congregation are acting as greeters in honor of the occasion. But just as the first people arrive, a cry of alarm sounds as Michael walks in the foyer. Michael has stepped in his brand new white sneakers into a large pile of dog poo. And he's discovered this unfortunate fact after coming inside. He's vigorously wiping it off in the foyer and yelling for his mother, who quickly assesses the situation and declares the shoes impossible to clean before the prelude. The shoes are tossed outside. The lobby is cordoned off by a couple of chairs while choir members get paper towels and soapy water and start to scrubbing. I later learned from a first-time visitor with a fortunate sense of humor that the young ushers have improvised on the standard greeting, saying with grave politeness, "Good morning. Welcome to our church. There's a lot of dog crap on the floor, so watch your step." As the prelude ends, Michael, now in his stocking feet, receives a whispered pep talk and hugs from his parent. He then takes his place opposite me in the chancel, calmly preaches his sermon, and is honored, blessed, and declared as having come of age by the church. After the service, while Michael cuts into his huge cake and receives congratulations and presents, I ask his parents what they said to him. We just reminded him that everyone here loved him and didn't care if he had poop on his shoes or no shoes at all. Thinking about it on the drive home, I realized that we all should have taken off our shoes. We all should have stood in our socks beside the young man as a sign that his parents' words were the truth, that where there is love and understanding and acceptance, anything can be tolerated. Nothing matters then. The ground could be covered in the worst, smelliest poo, and it still would be holy ground. I've learned that all of us, ministers as well as members of the congregation, bring our dog poo into the church in a manner of speaking. We all track in awful, nasty stuff that no one wants to see or be around. Our insatiable needs, our hidden weaknesses and deepest fears, our rage and our greed and our bitterness and prejudices, our despair. All this stuff really does stink. Love doesn't quite make it go away, but love makes it possible to see it and not be quite so disgusted by it or ready to run away at the first bad smell. Maybe this is because love gives us so much else to look at. And maybe that's what church is about. I invite you to think of the different ways that you have come to this church, shining and proud, or tracking in whatever stuff you have, the ways that we can help build a congregation for all. We do that in part through our offering. This morning's offering will now be taken and gratefully received. So now that the holidays are over, I'm going to do a show of hands sort of thing. Who prefers knowing what you're going to get for presents, whether for the holidays or your birthday? Do you prefer knowing what you're going to get or being surprised? Those who want to know, raise your hand. Really? Look around, like three of you. I am shocked. So those of you, everyone else, you prefer to be surprised, or you don't really care, you just want the presents? Is this pretty much, you know, I don't care, I just take what I want. I have this idea because, you know, I'm one who likes surprises and thinks that that's the way to give gifts. But, you know, creating a new family with my wife and extended family, we have to learn new traditions, and there you do lists. And you don't, this just doesn't give you ideas, you just buy the thing on the list and you give someone something. So I've come to understand that the words for presents and gifts actually make sense. To me, if I'm surprising someone, if I've come up with the idea for something, I'm gifting it to you. But if it's something you've given to me on a list, I'm just presenting it to you. This is a present. You wanted it, you named it, I just went and got it, and here it is. So that makes it a little bit easier in some way, I think, but it's a little strange, I think, to always be so predictive in what we get. I have to admit, I'm a little risk-averse when it comes to gift-giving because my beloved partner is very particular about what she wants. Everyone in my family knows that she has the face when she unwraps a gift, and you wait to see, is it a, I'm returning this face, or a, I'll keep this? The sad part is sometimes that face is even for things she put on the list. She just forgot or has changed her mind. For those of us who are more risk averse, I'm someone who's relatively risk averse. I want to know what to expect, and I want to know that I'm doing things right, and so I hope to get the list and meet the need. Maybe you're like that in your own gift giving or in other ways, in relationships or at work. You want to know what's expected of you with your job or in your school. You want to know how to show up and be present, or maybe you are totally okay with surprises. You are okay with whatever face is made and you can roll with the punches. And if you're one of those people, God bless you and teach us. Rather, I like to think of myself as rolling with the punches when I have to, but liking to plan ahead. One of those times came when I was leading worship. Actually, that happens a lot in worship. First service, I forgot the benediction. One I wrote myself, I just stood there and blanked. But another time, it was a little bit worse. There's a reason I told the dog poo story. I once had my own dog poo story. Can you believe it? I led an animal blessing outside because I didn't want to mess up the beautiful church. I thought it was wise to do it outside, and so we had two services with lots of dogs, not as many cats. First service went fine. My dog sat patiently beside me the entire time. But between the services, dogs do what they do. I left my iPad, my trusty iPad, which I preach from outside, and what, believe it or not, in May it'll overheat. And so I couldn't preach from it. Everything I had written for the worship was here. I didn't have a backup. And so I'm here trying to remember what I've said, trying to fiddle with it to see if I can get it to work. And I'm walking around after a worship with lots of dogs. Foot firmly stepped in it. What do you do when you're around people that you care for and you want to care for you when you've stepped in it? This is what the holidays are about, right? Stepping in it in some form, literally or metaphorically, and trying to figure out how you'll still be loved and cared for after all. Now, many of us know that our families, hopefully, actually, many of us know that our families of origin will care for us no matter what. It's not universally true, but many of us have had that experience. But it's helpful to find other places, communities of our choosing, friends and religious communities where we know we can take a risk, say something we're not sure about, believe something a little out there, and it's okay, even if we step in it. That's one of the reasons that I love Unitarian Universalism, and one of the reasons that I fell in love with this church around the holidays. When I first became a UU, it was during this season, right after Thanksgiving, joining right after the New Year. And it was seeing people practice the different songs and the different traditions, learning about different cultures and faiths, trying on things to see what made sense and what rang true for their lives, understanding that not everything would. For me, there was something helpful in the space to take a risk and in the comfort of knowing that it would be okay if I failed. Time and time again, I have done that in a UU community, fallen flat on my face, and been helped back up before. In many ways, that's what our faith, our liberal tradition, is about. Maybe you've done this too, saying something you're not sure of, seeing how others will react, and then taking it back or not, learning to test the boundaries of a community is something we do in adolescence and then continue to do even into our adulthood. And yet often our society encourages us to tamp that down through getting us to be quiet in our neighborhood meetings or encouraging us to kind of self-select into certain groups on the internet, so that we no longer have to risk diversity. This church encourages us to be out there, to say what it is we think no matter what, and to grow from one another. It's our liberal religion, actually, that says that each person's presence here makes a difference, that there's no one truth, there's no sacred text that holds all of the wisdom, but rather comes from each of us being here together. Calls for each of us to take the risk. Betty Sedan, a Unitarian Universalist, wrote, "We are here because we want our religious journey to include more than one holy land, more than one vision or scripture, so we sing praises in many styles and languages. We make a joyful noise unto whomever nourishes and sustains us." We can only do that if we take the risk of stepping out of ourselves, if we are able to be vulnerable and willing to celebrate whatever it is we've gone through our life and witnessed, and to hear the other. Now, many of us have created homes where that's possible, but it's not always true that the homes we came from allow for that. Nor is it true that our religious homes allowed for that, because so many of our spiritual homes said that there was one truth, whatever that was, that we must follow. And so it's hard for us to imagine what it's like to come into this building and create something specific, an intentional community where diversity reigns more than anything else, where what binds us together is our community. It's the unfolding of religious truth through diversity that's important. Showing up for one another, whether it's over coffee, whether it's helping people when they're sick, whether it's at coming-of-age celebrations and getting through, stepping in things that you shouldn't. Whenever it is that we come together for one another, that's the critical piece. Not some truth that we all know, not some place that we will all go when it's over, but how we are together now. Another UU minister, Victoria Weinstein, writes, "We never really know what combination of fate and friendship and good luck it is that brings certain people together in this world. But we believe that membership, that being here, calls each of us to celebrate the faith that brings us together. The relationships we form are based on the needs of the soul, needs that render each of us vulnerable and therefore reliant on each other's grace and goodness. We hope that you will allow yourselves to know and to be known, to minister to and to be ministered unto, to love and to be loved by the church." So often our culture encourages us to imagine ourselves as self-sufficient and self-contained, somewhat beyond the reaches of community, and yet we must understand that none of us are truly alone. By reaching out, even if only a little bit, by accepting the grace and the goodness, as Victoria wrote, we can shape the world for better, rejecting the passive approach that says we're okay if we're just in our own bubble. As Unitarian Universalists, we find the sacred in the creation of the world, not just in the end. This is what it means to be a process-oriented church, that the results of our actions mean more than what comes of it. And so showing up is what's important. Christmas Eve services, at least at the 6 o'clock service, I talked about this, that it's not the gifts that we give, but the act of giving. One of the stories that I love that best illustrate this comes from David Blanchard. It's one of those kind of folk tales that you can attribute to just about any culture. He says, "The best story I ever heard has nothing to do with Christmas and everything to do with Christmas. It's about a boy who wanted to give a gift to his teacher who was going home to England for winter break. The child had no money and his options were few. So the day before the teacher was to leave for this Christmas break, the child walked far away and brought this huge, beautiful seashell. The teacher asked the boy where he could have found such a seashell, for they weren't indigenous to anywhere close to the area where they were. And the boy was so proud, he said there was only one spot where such extraordinary shells could be found. And when he named the place, a certain bay many miles away, the teacher was speechless. Why, it's gorgeous, it's miraculous even, but you shouldn't have gone all that way to get a gift for me. The time you spent walking would have been better served studying. Your energy would have been better served in a different way." But the boy's face brightened and simply said that the long walk was part of the gift. Not just that the shell was the gift, but the act of giving was meaningful. David Blanchard goes on to write, "Most of the meaningful gifts we give to each other require some version of that long walk. The long walk we sign on for with children who need our patience, our wisdom, our honesty, and our trust more than we ever could have imagined when their lives first began. The long walk we share with our spouses, which takes us through uncharted, unexpected territories of sickness and health, richness and poorness, better and worse. The long walk we take with our friends when they're grieving the loss of someone they love, when they are ill, when they are discouraged. The long walk truly is part of the gift we give. So when Christmas has been tidied up and packed away until next year, when the gifts acknowledged but mostly already forgotten, when the new year stretches in front of us and we wonder how we'll get through the months ahead, we know that it's not through the things that existed in the boxes, but in the people who gave them to us. With their gifts, they are telling us something too wonderful, perhaps too embarrassing for words. They are telling us that for us, they will take the long walk. For many of us, getting to Unitarian Universalism and accepting it as our own religious tradition was and still is a considerably long walk. People gave us that gift by creating this church and many others over time, by standing up for religious freedom when it was hard, even when it would cost their life. And so for us, there is a charge in this year and every that we could give the same very valuable gift to others. There are many people for whom our faith would be a lifesaver, something that would call them and bring them back from hell, not the hell of damnation, but the hell of alienation and loneliness, the hell of having to fake religious beliefs that we can't bear to say when we know we don't believe them, but others press upon us too much. The hell of having to be with people who don't love us for who we are. We could offer a heaven for all. It takes, true, some risk. It takes giving a gift that we don't know people will want. We don't always get a wish list from people who say they want a liberal religion that will welcome them no matter their questions of faith, no matter who they are. Sometimes they show up with a wish list that just says they are tired or hurting, that they feel lonely, that they need company, or they want a class on Buddhism. But we can take that wish list. We can take what we see as the ideas for their gifts and say, I have something for you that I think would fit a little bit better. Accept it. Take it on. Maybe you won't like it. Maybe you'll make a face. But keep it. The truth is that it's an experimentation. Ralph Waldo Emerson says that all life is an experiment. Heck, the more experiments, he says, you make, the better. So what if it ends up that we fail up again? For we shall never be so afraid of a tumble. Here at the beginning of a new year, may that be our resolution. Each year, I read a poem on New Year's Day as an effort to kind of bolster my resolve. It's a poem from Philip Appleman. Here it is in some brief adaptation. He writes, well, I did it again, bringing in the new year in New York, waiting up to help Chicago and Denver and LA, even Fairbanks and Honolulu. And it's all beginning again, just like those other Januaries, an instant repeat. But I've had enough of turning to look back, the old post-morteming of defeat. Thinking of people I loved but didn't touch, friends I haven't seen for years, strangers who smiled but didn't speak. Failures. Failures. No, I refuse to leave it at that, because somewhere, off camera, January is coming like Venus up from the murk of December. Resolved, this year I'm going to break my losing streak. I'm going to stay alert, reach out, speak when not spoken to. Read the minds of people in the streets. I'm going to practice every day, stay in training, and be moderate in all things but love. So may we be resolved here in this new year to take seriously our mission to create a safe community for seeking and service, to share this religious home that comforts us as we seek for meaning amidst the mysteries. May we take the risks that come. And when we fall down, may we reach out our hands to be lifted up. When we see others falling down, falling in the muck and the mud, may we reach out our hands to help them. And above all, may we be moderate in all things, but in all things but love. Amen, and blessed be.